increasingly influential union-funded think tank. We're going to hear from John McTernan, who, as I'm sure many of you have seen his broadcast commentary on the Labour Party, a former advisor to two prime ministers in different parts of the world, Australia and the UK. And then we're going to hear an outsider's perspective, Tim Montgomery, columnist for The Times and prominent Conservative Party activist. I am going to start in no particular order. I'm going to ask John to kick off with a few remarks.
I'll try and be short because this is all about your questions. It's not about our opinions, although in my case it is about my opinions. I just want to say I'm really grateful to be here at the first conference after the election of a Labour government. It's great for us to be in power. It's really good to be in power, isn't it? Because we certainly had a leader speech which gave no indication that we had just lost the election. We didn't even have a leader speech that acknowledged that we had a number of colleagues present who lost their seats. So all the thanks that there was, no thanks to the people who leafleted, door-knocked, who were selected, would have been great MPs, Fabians and non-Fabians alike, and those who were great colleagues who've lost their seats. And I think that's because today's conference speech showed us what conference is about, what the Corbyn Project is about. It's about taking control of the Labour Party, not winning the country. And I'm very clear what this week has been about. Last week was deliberately disastrous to set such a low bar that this week could be not described as a car crash. And so that's it. We've had a week that's not a car crash. But this was our chance to speak to the country. A country which a majority of voters voted for right-wing political parties, a country which gave the Tories their first majority for 20 years, a country in which we have to win Tory and UKIP voters to vote for Labour in England and Wales and in Scotland, and SNP voters in Scotland to vote for Labour, and not a suggestion of how we would do that, no retail offer, no vision. All there was a description of a country which I would hate to live in. And thank God I live in the United Kingdom, not in the country that was described by the leader in his leader's speech. What a pile of miserabilism. We live in a great country. It has problems and challenges, but this is a great and rich and wealthy country. And no voter out there, no real voter who didn't vote for us is going to go, do you know what? I voted Tory, I voted UKIP, I voted SNP, because the Labour Party were insufficiently miserable about what the country is like. It was a rambling and uninspiring speech, and I'm afraid what this conference has been about is about denying the moderate mainstream MPs a voice and a legitimacy, because next year, the only reason for pluralism this year is to deny democracy next year, to actually get the numbers and take over the party. I'm pretty clear about that. So next year, we're back with a proper fight, and that means Labour First and Progress and the Fabians and every part of the movement that supports the mainstream moderate MPs, 9 out of 10 of whom did not vote for the leader, 9 out of 10 of whom are not at war with the electorate, who want to actually accept the reality of the election that we were beaten by. You can tut. We were beaten by the Tories. We were beaten well by the Tories. We were surprised by being beaten by the Tories, and that should not have happened. We should not have been beaten or surprised. And that's my takeaway from this week. It's been a dreadful week for the Labour Party, and for people to simply go around happy that the leader didn't come. It's fine. It's a party of dissent. Next year, dissent will be denied because when they get in charge, they're not happy about being booed. I can point my finger if I want. When those guys come to power, they will not be tolerant of me or of other people. They will not have a voice. They're going to take the constituency. They want deselection. So next year is going to be a really interesting conference. We got to organise, but this week has been a missed opportunity, a massive missed opportunity.
Thank you very much, John. I knew this wasn't going to be a dull session. Kate, Jeremy spoke about a kinder politics, and he absolutely spoke about a more plural, open party. But yesterday, two moderate members of the NEC were replaced by two left members. Which of those should we be taking as the sign of where the party is going?
What's really interesting is that you said, Andrew, all shades of opinion, and I think I thought, well, all shades of opinion were actually going on in my own head. certainly out of my head and in this room, it's very clear that we're seeing all shades of opinion. And I think it's also right what you said, that this year, actually, the mood that we've broadly felt has been warm, friendly, positive. Most people have felt enthusiastic and excited. And that may be in part because a lot of the people who are here for their first conference. And it has been from a really good conference. I mean, really fun and interesting. And people have had a very, very enjoyable time. We did the Women's Conference on Saturday. Some of you may have been at that. The Women's Conference is always, in my view, much, much better than conference. Much more lively, much more informal, much more vibrant. This year, it was excellent. It was the best one we have had. So I don't think we should decry the mood of people who are attending this conference. And nor do I think we know a tremendous amount yet about their own personal politics. Because as with the people who have voted in the leadership election, quite a lot of them, I think, have voted for change, for something different, for something that they perceive to be authentic and new, and they see that in Jeremy. And it's not about the kind of politics or political beliefs, it's much more about style and the sense that they want a new way of doing things. And to that constituency, Jeremy's focus on values, on a different kind of politics, a different kind of leadership is really, really welcome. And it's actually immensely interesting and challenging for people like me, because you suddenly find yourself out there saying what you think, which is scary, if I'm honest, at times, but liberating. And John is sceptical that that will continue. But for now, I think it's a really interesting time and question whether you can run a political party in that way, whether anybody, whether Jeremy Corbyn or any leader, would run a political party in that way. But it is the way it is today. And I often say to people, you know, in any other walk of life than party politics, this style of leadership would be a strength. A style of leadership that is consensual, that is consultative, that doesn't have preconceptions about where it's going, that wants to bring in opinions from not just its immediate organisation, but from a wider audience, would be seen as a very desirable thing. And what is it that makes party politics different, that that's not a good style or a modern style or a suitable style of leadership? I don't know the answer. My question is, why can't it be a good style of leadership for a political party when it works in every other walk of life? I don't think Jeremy could have given any other kind of speech this afternoon, because he would have been completely at odds with the mandate that he has received from hundreds of thousands of party members. He gave people what people have just voted for. And I think John is right to say it was a speech that was focused to my mind, to an internal audience than to the country. Is that wrong at this stage in the electoral cycle? We're 4.5 years away from a general election. I personally think that rebuilding some party foundations is a good thing to be doing at this point in the cycle. I recognise received wisdom that says you define yourself early with the electorate and the commentariat, but let's face it, that script was written before Jeremy had opened his mouth. I think building something internally at this stage is a valid and viable thing to do, and the speech was about doing some of that. So I think it's really just an immensely interesting time in our party. And that, for me, is okay this week. It's not okay just to go on being interesting for the next 3.5, 4 years. At some point, we need to be nailing this down to taking us to power. I guess people in this room feel we haven't got that long to make that leap across. But for this week, I think it would be impossible to deliver any other kind of party conference, because I think this conference is going with the mood of the leadership election that we've just had.
Thank you very much. Tim, what will the Conservative Party have made of this week?
Thank you, Andrew, for that question. Well, you began by saying there has been no disaster this week. And that in itself is a disaster for you, because the Tories were worried for the first 72 hours of the Jeremy Corbyn leadership. It wasn't going well, and they thought it might not last. The longer this project lasts, the happier the Conservatives are. and the moderate competence, the good performance that Jeremy Corbyn showed on the Andrew Marr programme, the OK speech today, the fact that big debates over Trident, etc. have been put off, the Conservatives aren't unhappy about that. So that is what the Tories think. They know it's easy to defeat Jeremy Corbyn at the next general election. The project that the Conservatives are engaged with is tainting the whole Labour Party with association with Jeremy Corbyn and his politics. And the longer this project that you've engaged in goes on, the more damage will be done. And that is why John over there, who may not be popular in what he has shared with you, you should listen to him. He's 100% right. Now look, you may say, and it's perfectly fair, you may see me as a very partial, destructive voice in this. And that's
fair.
But look, I think this is a great political party. The Labour Party is one of Britain's great political parties. You have done some incredibly important things, like the minimum wage, like the big increase in the aid budget, like gay equality, that I don't think the Conservative Party would have done, but the Conservative Party embraced because that was the settlement that you gave the country. You still need to do great things. And there were little hints in Jeremy Corbyn's speech today, like the remarks on Saudi Arabia. Mm-hmm. British foreign policy and our closeness to Saudi Arabia is disgusting. Mm-hmm. And for a leader to get up and say that, that was very, very welcome. But you need to be electable. You aren't a protest movement. You're a political party. You're the political arm of the left. And electability really does matter. And you have chosen a leader who is absolutely unelectable. So the things that you believe in, the causes that you champion, the people you are supposed to represent, who don't get a perfect deal from the party I support. It is wrong that inheritance tax is being cut at the same time as tax credits are being cut. There are things that I don't agree with the party I support, and it's vital that you oppose it. But you have a leader who will not sing God Save the Queen in St. Paul's Cathedral. You have a leader who divorced his wife over a disagreement about what school to send their children. You have a leader who has consistently, and a shadow chancellor, who has consistently apologised for the IRA. Now you may find those three things acceptable. It tests off the scale from the Tories amongst the voters that you need to attract. You're not going to attract them so long as you have Jeremy Corbyn as leader. You can ignore that advice. You could ignore what John McTurnan is saying to you. But if you really want to be the champion of the working class people that you say you want to represent, if you really want to champion the people at the edges of society, some of whom are being hurt by some Tory policies, you will get rid of your leader as soon as possible.
Tim. And now let me turn to Ellie, who voted for Jeremy, and I want to ask her about the style of leadership we've seen this week, about the policy platform that may be emerging, and also this question of electability. Ellie.
It takes me about 5 hours to get up because I've got quite a bad back, even though I'm relatively young. Well, luckily for you, I've got a very loud voice, so hopefully you should all be able to hear me. It's always a pleasure going after Tim Montgomery. He has a speech like that. So yeah, I did have a speech prepared, but the other speakers have inspired me to throw it out of the window and just follow Kate's lead and just say what I think. But before I do that, I just want to make really, because it's a bit boring and administrative, but I just want to make clear that even though I do work for CLAS, I am actually only speaking in a personal capacity, and CLAS doesn't have a position on Jeremy Corbyn's leadership. So please don't take this as a CLAS official position. We're independent of the Labour Party as an organisation. I suppose I want to talk about on May the 8th, the day after the general election. Because what I did on May the 8th, I woke up, I didn't wake up because I didn't sleep the night before. I got up, I burst into tears, And then I emailed all of my friends that I know that are lefty, and I said, we need to go to a constituency and we need to canvass, you know, maybe a constituency like, what's Polly Billington?
Thurrock.
Maybe a constituency like Thurrock or Nuneaton, somewhere like that. And we need to go there and we need to just canvass and meet as many people as we can. And we just need to say to them, did you vote Conservative? Why did you vote Conservative? What do you think about politics? And ask without judgment and without wanting to have an argument, and just hear what they had to say, and then talk about and think about the results with an open mind. And what really frustrates me about people in the PLP and in the Labour Party is that this party has been taken over massively. It's been transformed from top to bottom. Jeremy Corbyn got in with a 59% victory that's higher than Blair's. It's unprecedented. It's unbelievable. And the party has been transformed at all levels. Where is the curiosity about why that happened in your party? Why aren't you asking these questions? Why aren't you going out there and meeting people who voted for Jeremy and saying, why? Why did you do that? I want to know the answer to that with an open mind. Why are you instead calling them morons, telling them they're going to destroy the country, being angry with them, treating them like they're stupid? First of all, why are you doing that? Why is there such a lack of curiosity? And second of all, why do you think that is what is going to get them to change their minds? I will tell you, as someone that actually wasn't sure whether I was going to vote at all, let alone vote for Jeremy, that it was Tony Blair, of all people, saying that people like my parents, who have been public sector workers their whole lives, they're working class people, telling me that they're going to vote for Jeremy. It was people like John Mann calling them morons, and people like Tony Blair telling my mum, a nurse in the NHS, that she needs a heart transplant, that made me think, right, do you know what, sod you, I'm going to vote for Jeremy. And I will tell you something else. You talk about electability. There's all this talk about, well, Jeremy is not going to get the Labour Party elected. I'm sorry, but in May, I remember Stephen Bush, a man that I don't agree with his politics, but I think is a very good analyst and has, you know, some very interesting ideas. He wrote a piece saying that Labour would need to win back 100 seats, that in order to win by a 1-point margin in 2020, it would need a 10-point swing. And then, of course, there's the fact that Labour lost Scotland under John McTiernan, I add. So I don't understand why we are now putting the whole issue...
Under Ed Miliband, I add.
Okay, we are now putting the whole of... Well, fine, it was under Ed Miliband, but the fact is that the issue of electability does not rest on Jeremy Corbyn. This was an issue that was a problem in the party before Jeremy even became leader. I don't understand why now we're saying, well, it rests on Jeremy Corbyn. I don't think it does.
He's the leader.
Can we respect our speakers?
Okay.
We're coming to questions. Please respect
the speakers. And the final thing that I want to say is, when we're talking about this idea of curiosity, well, I have spoken to a lot of Jeremy Corbyn supporters and I've asked them why they've voted for Jeremy. And, you know, what I get is that they're tired. They're tired that for the last 20 years, they've been told, canvass for us, vote for us, support us. You have to do everything to make sure that we get into power. But actually, you know, sod you, because we're going to appeal to these people over here. We're not going to listen to your principles and what matters to you. And they did everything that they were told. And in 2015, people around the country like me woke up on May the 8th, distraught to find that after they'd played by the rules, they'd voted for who they were told to vote, they did what they were told to do, there was still a Tory majority. And so then they decided, you know what, I'm not going to do that anymore. I'm going to vote for someone that represents my politics. And that is what I think has happened in the party. But unless the party itself, from the top downwards, starts asking those questions, then unfortunately what Andy said at the beginning won't hold true for long. There isn't going to be a party for very long. And I really think that this is what we need to do now as a party. We need to start asking these questions. Why do people vote for Jeremy on such an overwhelming mandate? What does that mean? How can we work with that? You know, these are the questions that you need to ask, and maybe you won't be comfortable with the answers, but you're not going to help the party, you're not going to help the left, and you're not going to help the country unless you are willing to have some curiosity about this immense change that's happened in your own party.
Thank you very much. Talking about, as you say, the 6 minute, and curiosity is one word, and respect, I think, is a word. You may not agree with Corbyn, but to disrespect those who have voted for him would be a disaster. There's an article in our new magazine, which I can wave at you, on Corbyn mania, which does exactly what Ellie just talked about, speaking to a lot of Corbyn supporters and unpicking why they had changed. I think the analysis in that article is similar to yours. Now, let me open it up. Lots of questions. I can see lots of hands. I may need some help from colleagues to help me find people near the back of the room. So I don't know if anyone from the Fabian Society can help with that. But in the meantime, I'll start at the front. Let me start with the woman there with white hair. Yes, to you, ma'am. Do we have a mic? I can't see.
Yeah.
Do you want to chat? Have we got a mic?
Without the mic, they're trying to fix
the. I'm afraid we've got problems with the PA system. If you could shout really loudly, I apologise.
I think I can shout. Where on earth did the Fabian Society find these two speakers?
Yeah. The Labour Party.
The men on the wing.
And see the overwhelming support that Jeremy Corbyn got. They young people, old people. Everybody, they adored him, and so do I. And I understand the person saying that we should be more middle of the road and go along with some of these MPs who don't like him. But they lost the election, didn't they? Jeremy didn't lose the election. So what have they got to offer? But the last thing I want, my question is, we've heard about polls taken amongst Tory voters, Labour voters. Did anyone poll the millions of people who did not vote? Let's find out why they didn't vote, because they were fed up with the status quo of the political system that we've lived under.
Thank you.
They were so disillusioned in.
Great. I can't even see the people at the back, but there's the tallest hand up there. If you think I'm pointing at you, stand up. Yes, you sir. You got it right.
I don't think I need a mic.
What's your name?
My name's Pat. So.
Keep going.
Part of the problem I have is that a lot of what was said by the final speaker, whilst I respect it, I clearly don't agree with most of it. The party in the past, from being a history grad, a British history grad, always liked to ask itself, what do party members think? Now, Jeremy Corbyn recently getting elected is an answer to what party members think, but it's not an answer as to what the country thinks. And when Jeremy Corbyn gets up this morning or this afternoon, he has to tell us what in 5 years' time his country will look like. Because first impressions matter. Not just on the doorstep, not just in life in general, they matter when you get up and you give your speech. And I do not know what his country will look like. I know he doesn't like cyberbullies. I know he doesn't like, I know he loves broadband and several other things. That the vision for the country wasn't made, and we'll probably have to wait for another year before we get this level of media coverage asking what a Labour government would do for you to make your life better. We haven't answered that since 2000.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And that's it. One more in this round. I'm really spot for choice, so apologies, I'm not going to get to everyone. I'll go for the chat waving a magazine, but good tactic, but I'm not taking one of those again.
My name is John Ringer. I have just a general question about, it seems to me that when we were talking to the people who voted Tory at this election, it seems that a lot of people in the party now want to move on and instead ignore them and ask about people who didn't vote. And the lady who spoke first mentioned these, you know, millions of non-voters. Can John or Tim explain very concisely why that doesn't make any sense and why non-voters are not the absolute panacea to our party's problems.
So, can I give a plug for two recent articles from the Fabian Society on that very subject? All the numbers are on our website. I wish it worked, but the number crunching we've done shows that the only way to win again is to take people off the Tories. Go and read my numbers and tell me once you've read the maths. Ellie, let me ask you to respond to those three.
I won't respond to the first one. I don't think it was directed at me. the second one, the comment was that you don't understand what Jeremy Corbyn's vision is, and that today was a missed opportunity to explain that. I was talking about this earlier today. I think that my opinion of his speech today was that his speech was an opportunity to for him to keep his base happy rather than to communicate to the public or to appease the lobby hacks. And I thought that was fairly sensible, partly because his base is the only thing that is standing between him and John McTiernan. Also because I don't think that Jeremy Corbyn will get, the press aren't going to be nice about him because he's delivered a certain speech. That's just not going to happen. Finally, people like us in this room, and I think this comes back to the question of winning elections and understanding why people vote. People like us in this room are really weird. Normal people don't come to sessions like this and talk about politics for hours and hours and hours, and they don't watch politicians give 50-minute speeches. Like, a couple of weeks ago, I said to my brother, "What do you think of Jeremy Corbyn?" And he said, "Who's Jeremy Corbyn?" That's like a normal reaction from a normal person about politics. So, I think that there was a lot in the speech that will play very well in the news, particularly around things around self-employment and around mental health. I think those are, it's a nice base to work from, to build up a sort of a vision of, something fairer, a vision of a Britain that works for the many and not the few. And I feel like that's where he's going. At this point, I'm not particularly worried about Jeremy, aside from obviously the massive challenges that he has that we all know about. But I mean, in terms of his conference performance, I'm not that worried. So I guess that's why.
Okay, Tim, could I briefly, please?
I was in the hall in 1999, to answer the lady's point, when William Hague gave, I think, the best speech I've ever heard at a party conference. I loved it. It was, "Come with me and I'll give you back your country." It stirred everyone in the hall. We loved it. And it fell completely flat outside in the country. I've been there in the Tory opposition years when the party played absolutely to its core votes. And it doesn't work. You have to reach out. The golden rule of politics, by someone I think John will respect from his Australian days, even though he's on the right, was set by John Howard, probably one of the most successful political leaders in the world. Spend 50% of your time with your core vote, spend 50% of your time with floating voters. I heard 95% spending time with your core voters today and 5% reaching out. It's not going to work. And if you're going to keep judging Jeremy Corbyn's popularity on how he's greeted inside Labour halls, you're completely going in there. Very, very briefly, Ellie May's point about trying to understand why this phenomenon's happened is a really good question. And I would say there are some very real problems about fixing capitalism. A lot of the problems, asset bubbles, stagnating wages, and bankers not ever being properly reckoned with, those problems are still out there. That's the anger that's out there in the electorate. But you are not going to address those issues or resonate with the public when you have a leader who the Tories quite rightly understand. It's not the economic arguments that is a weak point. It's the sense, fairly or unfairly, that British people have that he doesn't love his country in the way that they would expect a prime minister to love their country. Now, you may not think that's fair, but the opinion polls are pretty conclusive on that so far.
It was curious that we had a little passage which was basically an economics lecture, wasn't there, in the middle of the speech. Kate?
Well, I think, just picking up on a couple of points that we've heard around the room and on the panel, I think it's, as I said, I think it is right that the speech, the way I heard it, it was more addressed to an internal rather than an external audience. But one speech alone isn't the 100% of the effort. and the chance that Jeremy has to make that effort of connecting over the next 5 years. So I actually agree with Tim about the balance of two audiences. I agree that the balance of this speech was, in my view, more for the supporter base than for the country. That's a personal opinion. It's not necessarily the opinion of all my colleagues or everybody in this room. What I don't agree is that this everything rests on getting that 50-50 balance in this speech, because winning the election in 2020 is a process. It's a process of rebuilding our foundations internally as much as it's a process of speaking to people who are outside of our party. I thought it was a very values-laden speech, actually. I think that was what Jeremy was aiming for it to be. And I thought also it was a speech where he did try to signal that politics was going to be done in a different way. He talked about kinder politics. I'm sceptical that politics is ever kind, but I think what we were getting was a signal that there would be he would make a virtue of disagreement. He would use disagreement as an energizer and as a means of opening up debate. And I think whilst it may have been a bit oblique on Tim's challenge about fixing capitalism, and John McDonnell's speech I thought yesterday did signal the approach to fixing some of the problems that Tim has talked about, and was very well received. And I think it's interesting to think of the two speeches together. Perhaps when we have another round of comments, Andrew, people would like to talk about how they see the two together, because Jeremy's wasn't a speech in isolation. It is part of a sort of package of stories that are coming out this week.
Yeah, and the frame in Jeremy's remarks today on security actually felt like it could grow out into something facing the country, but it was sort of rather muffled amongst so many other themes. John?
Okay, look, I wouldn't normally do this, but I've leafleted for the Labour Party since 1970 in that general election. I have been a party member since 1974. I was a councillor for 8 years in London Borough of Southwark. I've worked for more than 30 years as a full-time paid staffer for the Labour Party. I'm having nobody here or on social media questioning the fact that I am Labour to my bones. This party needs rebuilding. We need rebuilding because we were beaten, we were thrashed, we were hammered by the British voters. And every time we turn our back on the voters, we ask them to reject us again. And there is no answer by saying there's a mythical group of voters who didn't vote, who if we only were more left-wing, we'd get them to vote for us. 91 of the seats, the 100 seats in which there's the lowest turnout in Britain, are held by the Labour Party. Your policy, your ambition of getting non-voters to vote will give Harriet a bigger majority. We don't need Harriet to have a bigger majority. We actually need to win Brighton Kemp Town. We need to know why do people like that not vote. And Tim mentioned John Howard. I was actually having coffee this morning with Alexander Downer, who's the High Commissioner from Australia, and he was the Foreign Secretary in the Howard government. And he said to me, what me and John would do is we'd sit and we'd say, what do tradies, what do self-employed people need from us to vote for us? And he said, look at that, there's a van there, there's two guys in it, it's a scaffolding van. What's Jeremy Corbyn going to say this afternoon that they'll even hear, let alone that'll attract them to him? I heard a speech which offered nothing to the self-employed, apart from suggesting that self-employed... I heard a speech which had nothing for the self-employed, apart from saying they were driven into it by this cruel Tory government. Such a miserablest approach to say people don't choose self-employment. But there was nothing, no retail offer. You can bump your gums all you like. There's no route through to a Labour victory and a Labour government, no route through, which does not include winning Tory and UKIP and SNP voters back to the Labour Party. And that audience he spoke to tonight, this afternoon in the conference, they were not people who were in any doubt about who they were going to vote for the next election. He got a resounding backing by people who are going to vote Labour in 2020. That will give us the same result, but worse next time. And the sadness, the real sadness about the speech, the John McDonnell speech, and the sadness about today's speech, two men who claimed that they were talking, it was straight talking, right? We find out this evening that a chunk, the best chunk actually, of Jeremy Corbyn's speech is plagiarised. It's lifted from a website of somebody who offered a speech in 2011 to Ed Miliband, which Ed Miliband didn't use, so it's been on a website, and it was lifted by Jeremy and put into the speech. Now, is that straight talking? I don't think it's straight talking. There's going to be mockery tomorrow in the papers.
Thank you. Right, another round of questions. I will go for man with the red jumper. Thank you. Could we have a little quiet, please?
Thank you. Just one very quick question, then I'll be another slightly
briefly.
First question, if we're going to do politics differently, will that work if nobody else does it differently, especially the press?
Yeah.
And also, the speeches I've heard the Congress say are very much geared towards our core working class people who we need to help, and I completely agree we need to help. But if you talk to what we call a working class person, that's probably another debate of what is a working class person, they will say to their kids, go to school, get a good education, get a good job, and they want that for their kids because they want their kids to do better than them. They want their kids to have middle class aspirations, but their party isn't speaking to where they want their kids to be.
Thank you.
I wonder if they'll be getting a comment from
And interestingly, most of the new supporters and joiners are not from working class backgrounds. towards the back, Any hands up? You're all very shy at the back. I'm trying to give you a shout. Okay, we've got one on the left at the back.
Okay, so I'm Corey of Nostalgia. Now, I'll admit I'm Corbyn supporter. I don't particularly have any particular qualification or uniquely direct anger at either John or Tim. I think John is possibly enjoying too much controversy at the moment. And he probably enjoys it a bit too much. And the only issue I have with the way that John and other people dealt with it is, as Ellie said, you know, that they're making a mockery of Corbyn people. And for God's sake, it was inevitable, not that Corbyn would win, but that more left-wing people in the party, or even just ordinary members who, you know, had lived under New Labour, were going to get pretty pissed off at some point, right? If you ask any average member, even if you can represent it, my dad was not a committed New Labour, right? Not a committed left-wing either. What I asked him, when I asked him his opinion of New Labour, I said, you know, what did you think of New Labour? He said, well, I thought it would be a wolf in sheep's clothing, and I'm still waiting. Right? And that was the issue, because for many party members, in spite of the fact they understand you need political and economic credibility, they were sick to death of what they were told, of how they were treated within the party.
Thank you.
And, you know,
can you wrap up?
I'm not going to say that Corbyn is definitely going to win the next election, but I feel that...
Yeah.
You know, I don't have to.
Thank you.
There's no political risk, but I think this needs to be considered by some people at
Corbyn. Great, thank you. And I'll take one more. We'll go for, I can't see the person. There's someone there with glasses. Yes, you, yes.
I might be the only person who voted Green and Lib Dem and not Labour in the last two, in the previous but one election. And one of the reasons was because I saw the crown being handed down from Blair to Brown without any dissent. And it was a case of naked emperors, as far as I was concerned. I'm outside. I'm not a member of the Labour Party. I've walked in out of the streets of Brighton. But I have been a Labour member party member before. One of the issues I felt really, you know, shocked about was how... You've forgotten how people walked to stop the war in Iraq, and it was ignored. How can you say now that you think Jeremy Corbyn will ignore people? What's your evidence? We had evidence we were ignored, and that is still resonant.
And thank you.
The reason I think the reason that he is refreshing is because he's peeled off a lot of layers of cant and double standards. And if you're saying that he might not be electable, we had four people, none of them potentially were particularly electable to me.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yeah. that was a point made in the Fabian Review article I talked about. Kate, you can trace a route from 2003 to Jeremy's election, can't you?
You can, but it's not fair, because I will defend the Labour governments of Blair and Brown with my last breath. The New Deals, the minimum wage, Sure Start, the Human Rights Act, the Youth Justice Board, maternity rights, reinstating trade union rights at GCHQ. Do not tell me these were not progressive governments of the Left. They were, and I am proud of them. And we should defend them. And Jeremy would defend them. Everybody in this room should defend them. We should be proud of them. And to say we were lied to and ignored on the basis of a great deal of hurt and pain around Iraq, which I recognise, but that is not, I must tell you, what is said to me repeatedly on the doorsteps of my constituency in Urmston. People said to me before May the 7th this year, for God's sake, get in this time. For God's sake, win. Ordinary, decent, working people, ordinary people caring for their families, people who loved their communities and wanted life to be better for themselves and for their kids, wanted a Labour government. They didn't feel betrayed and sold out by the Labour governments of the last 15 years. Don't forget that. There is a huge amount of sense, I know, in this room that we needed to move on and do our politics different. And there's a huge amount to reconcile between where we are now and the pain that some people feel. But do not decry what we achieved under Blair and Brown. I am so proud of those progressive governments. And as Tim, I think, acknowledged in his remarks at the beginning, they set the agenda for where we are now in relation to so many of the socially liberal steps that the Conservative government have had to follow. They have had no choice.
And to add to that, some of our best ideas from the last 5 years are now Conservative policy.
Yeah.
Tim.
Well, I hope this will be relevant to what some people have been saying. Blair is being mentioned an awful lot. And I think someone said, I think it was Ellie May actually, who said part of the reason why she voted for Jeremy Corbyn was because Tony Blair told her not to. If you define yourself opposition to Tony Blair, if you keep fighting these battles, you do remind me of the Conservative Party during its wilderness years. Everyone was tested by, were they the true Thatcher? Were they an ally of hers? Were they repudiating her? Were they carrying on her flame? And many of the people, even today, who would self-identify as Thatcherites, I don't think she would recognise them as Thatcherites if she was still around. What if she came to power now, she'd be completely different from how she was in 1979, or significantly different. You have to be a creature of your times, not defining yourself against Blair or whatever. The best thing you could do, I think, would be to ban Blair as a word, whether you're a Blairite as old, or a Corbynista, to start looking to the future, not continually fighting the old battles, because that's what the Conservative Party did. It's what the Republican Party in the States is still doing, defining itself according to whether they are doing what would Reagan do. What would you all do now? Focus on now. Yeah. Celebrate, as my goodness, Kate did. I know, I was slightly frightened when that list was being reeled off. You know, be passionate about your past. Examine your past, but you know, don't live in it.
Thank you.
That's what you feel like a lot of people are doing at the moment in this movie.
Thank you, John.
I think Kate made one of the most important contributions, which is that part of the problem of why we're here is that we had, from the very beginning of the new Labour government, a systematic undermining of its achievements. If we are honest, Gordon Brown tried to drag Tony Blair out of number 10 over a very long period, and part of what he did to try to win the support of the broader party was to undermine Tony's claim on the progressive achievements of that Labour government. When Gordon is elected, he did exactly the same things that Tony had done, apart from he lost the election in 2010. Ed Miliband. So Ed Miliband then repudiated the entire 13-year achievement as if nothing had happened. That's the seeds of our problems were sown between 2008 and 2010. It's all very well, I've heard it on the fringe. Shadow ministers saying proudly that they'll not stop defending what the Labour government did. It's taken two general election defeats for people to realise what we should never have forgotten, that when we did things, we should have celebrated them at the time. Kate did that very, very passionately. But in 2010, we did not, and the whole Shadow front bench team accepted that we were turning our back on New Labour and the achievements of New Labour. If you don't define yourselves, you're not undefined, you're defined by your opponents. That is actually partly the problem that Corbyn and Macdonald have got. The confusion that they have attempted to weave about their actual policy positions. We know what their actual policy positions are. They're very, very unpopular policies with the public. But the confusion they've sought to means that the public either think there's no definition for Labour, or correctly, they think I should be suspicious because leaders don't ever have no agendas, and if they won't share that agenda with me, that must be quite a suspicious agenda. I should be very worried about it. So these were, as an earlier speaker said, very precious moments, the first conference of a new leadership, and if you don't define yourself in that, you're defined by it. And that leader's speech, again, let's say, tributes to everybody apart from the Labour leader who won three elections in a row. There could have been grace in that speech this afternoon. There was no grace in it.
Ellie?
I find myself in the strange position of agreeing with the only Tory on the panel. I think Tim is right to say that I think there's a problem with us being a little bit stuck, sort of still having, rehearsing those same arguments about Blairism. Can you all hear me at the back, by the way? Is the microphone? Okay, great. I agree with that. And just to clarify, when I said I voted for Jeremy because Tony Blair told me not to, it was more about the contempt of that wing of the party towards the surge rather than just on principle because Tony Blair told me not to. Obviously, I would vote on my principles more than just to stick two fingers up at Tony Blair. But I think when we talk about Blairism. I just want to make a very quick point, because the gentleman over there made a point about new politics, which I think is more important and more contemporary, and I want to respond to. I think basically the problem with Blairism, and when I was listening to that list that Kate read out, it made me feel really sad, because so much of it, and I agree that it was that government was progressive, and it did achieve a lot of things domestically. And I think that what makes me really sad is that so much of that is now being unpicked by this government, the Human Rights Act, tax credits, the poverty, all of this kind of thing that was achieved by Blair and Brown is now being unpicked, and that's very sad. I think what's happened with Blairism is that when Tony Blair came in, he had a vision of, the third way of social liberalism and that kind of thing. But since then, as Tim has said, that, so much of that has been adopted by the Tories. The Tories have found it very easy to encroach upon that ground. And what you've been left with is, Blairism now really offers nothing distinctive, nothing of interest, nothing whole. I think that it's created a vacuum which has been filled by Corbynism. I think that's what's happened. And I want to respond to the question about can we do a new politics if no one else is? Because I think that's a more question of the moment that we should be talking about. And it's one of the areas where I do disagree with a lot of Corbyn supporters. Which is this idea that we can bypass the old media and we can just use social media and we don't have to play the game, if you like. Well, I've been sort of bobbing about Westminster for sort of 4 years, and obviously the other people in this panel have worked in Westminster, and I'm sure that they'll agree with me that with Westminster there's no kind of nuance, there's no kindness, it is sort of eat or be eaten kind of atmosphere. And I think that if you want to survive, you do have to play the game a little bit, or you'll just be buried by the machine. I like the idea of a grassroots movement. I like the idea of using social media as a tool to energise people. I think those are very exciting things. But I don't think those things alone will keep the Corbyn movement, the Corbyn thing going. I think that, he also has to work within the system. He also has to understand that the world is as it is and not as he would like it to be. otherwise he will just be drowned. And I would like it to be different. I wouldn't like it to be like that. But I do unfortunately think that is the way that it is. And I think that there has to be some acceptance of that. Otherwise, yeah, he will just be buried by the machine.
Thank you. Another round of questions. Let's go for, there's a woman here. Yes, you, yeah, there's a mic coming. So.
Yes. I'm also surprised myself that I do agree with quite a bit of what John said, but I've a feeling you weren't really there today. You went in with a predisposition, you had your ideas and you never changed them. Now, a lot of the people in that room honestly agree with what Jeremy Corbyn is saying. What distresses me is that, A, as you say, John, the Labour Party, it's like a dysfunctional family. It can't let go of the past, the bad bits of the past, and move on, which we've got to do, talk about it, and let it go, which I think Jeremy Corbyn will do. But also, it distresses me, having been one of those 60s idealists, but had to turn it into practice, which I think Jeremy Corbyn is going to have a damn good chance of doing. He's going to give it a good try. There's no morality or integrity visible to me in politics at the moment. There's no morality. That standards, as Thank Kate you. Said, well said, Kate, we have to be a little unselfish. A lot of the people who voted for the Tories this time were scared of SNP.
Thank you.
My husband was one of them. He voted Conservative for the first time in his life.
Thank you.
Because he was made afraid by the press and the things that Cameron said.
Great. Okay, let's go somewhere in the middle of the room. Okay, there's a woman there waving.
Hi, my name's Ellen. I'm a Labour Party activist. We fought the manifesto the general election this year on a manifesto including policies such as fighting the energy companies, getting rid of zero-hour contracts, abolishing non-dom status to an extent. To me, those are all left-wing policies, okay? I was very proud to fight the election on that manifesto. So my first part of the question is, to those people who say that we lost the election because we were Tory-lite, how are those policies Tory-lite?
Yes.
And my second part of the question is, just how on earth do people think that we can win over swing voters who rejected those policies? I broke my heart that they rejected policies, but they did, and they voted give the Tory majority.
Thank you very much. And at the back of the room, I can't see if it's a man or a woman, but someone waving a mobile phone.
Hi, thanks. I just want to make a quick point. I have a specific question for John. And that's, I feel to some extent like we're talking across purposes in the sense that Jeremy has won by a long way. He is not about to be removed. Given that those things are true, complaining that he's the person that he was when he was elected is somewhat worrying. Because we're sort of beside the point. What we need to decide is where we go from here. And John, if you think that there is going to be an attempt to stifle the debate significantly come the next conference, how exactly is that going to work? What kind of committee is going to be set up? What kind of votes are being pushed through? What kind of information are we going to see? Could you possibly give us the specifics of what you expect?
Thank you. I'll take one more. Where there's a man here. Yeah.
Do this
one.
Put them on.
Hi. I feel that I come from quite a centrist background. I did support Blair, but I have been really infused by Corbyn because he has excited me. And I was having lunch today with someone that isn't politically active, and she's joining the Labour Party because of Corbyn. My question to the panel is, how can you say that Jeremy Corbyn won't win an election when we've seen one of the greatest moves to Labour in a generation, even greater than when Tony Blair came to office?
Thank you. The panellists could be very sure we'll get one more round in. Ellie, do you want to pick that up?
Yeah, sure. So the question of the lady who asked about the SNP, I think actually that is a. I think that's a really important point. And actually, I find myself in the weird position of agreeing with Nick Clegg on that, Because Nick Clegg said that the press essentially handed the victory to the Tories by endlessly and, as it turns out, pointlessly speculating about what the SNP would do for weeks and weeks and weeks. And I think that you're right to say that fears about the SNP essentially controlling England were out there. In fact, I remember Owen Jones saying that he went to a trade union meeting with very active left-wing trade unionists, and they were saying that they were afraid of the SNP. So I don't have any constructive solutions at this point. Perhaps earlier on in conference, when I was less tired and hungover, I might have given some ideas. But I think that that isn't something that should be dismissed. I think that we should all think about that. In terms of the Tory light swing voters question, I feel that, and I feel always feel really bad criticising Ed Miliband, because I really like Ed Miliband. I think he's a decent guy. But I feel that Ed Miliband's problem, I think two problems I think that Ed Miliband had. The first is coherence. I don't feel like, I feel like if you asked me at any point over the last 5 years what the Tories stood for, I could tell you instantly. But I couldn't say the same of Labour under Ed Miliband. Yeah. I don't really, and I went to pretty much every conference where he was leader, and I don't really know what he stood for. So I think that the problem was there was a massive coherence issue with Ed Miliband. And I think that was the main problem. And the other thing was a completely disastrous and inexplicable decision to accept the Tories' suggestion that Labour was responsible for the economic crisis. And obviously there was some attempt at triangulation to say we apologise for not regulating the banks. But at the end of the day, if someone says you're responsible for destroying the economy, you can't be nuanced about your reaction to that. That's quite a big charge. You have to completely rebut it. And I think it's been totally disastrous that they didn't.
Okay.
And I'll leave it there.
Thank you. John, briefly on the point you were asked.
The NEC is being stacked. That's straightforward. I fully expect Socialist Action to attempt to use the database that they have of Corbyn supporters to mobilise people to then stack GCs, and having stacked GCs to stack conference delegates. I fully anticipate an attempt to change union policy on key issues, particularly in Unite, which may be a struggle for them. And the consequence will be we only have pluralism for just as long until the other guys decide they can win the vote. The minute they think they can win the vote, they'll hold the vote. It might be at 5 minutes to midnight, it might be not next year but the year after, there might be new mechanisms created, but understand this. The project of Jeremy Corbyn and the people around him is not to win the country, it is to take over the Labour Party. And as a consequence, they'll shrink the Labour Party, they'll shrink our support, and they'll shrink the electoral support of the Labour Party. We'll start losing next year in May. But that is okay, because a 15 to 20% support for the Labour Party is far, far larger than any ultra-left party has ever achieved in British history. So for them, it will be a historic achievement. So it's wrong in a way for me to say they don't engage with the voters. They genuinely believe we should not have a compromise with the electorate. They genuinely believe that is the politics. It's unnecessary. And that all of the discussions default to, but look how enthusiastic the people who have joined the Labour Party are. If it was only, and look how angry people can get when you hear about how horrible things are in Britain. Mick McGahey, a great man, a great union leader, said, anger is not enough. If it was, we would have won all of our historic struggles a century ago and longer. Enthusiasm is not enough. There are no people in Swindon or Nuneaton or in Carlisle or Stockton going, do you know what? I really feel that my faith in the Tory government has been undermined by the enthusiasm shown by people who've joined the Labour Party. I'm going to change my vote.
Kate.
I think the gentleman at the back who said, what Jeremy was elected as with a particular position and a particular persona, How can we expect him to be other than the persona and with the positions that got him elected? And absolutely, the answer is that we can't and we shouldn't. That's what he brought to the leadership election campaign, and that is what the electorate voted for. And I would not expect or advise, indeed, anyone who is elected with a strong message then to come in and start doing something different within 2 weeks of that election. I think the challenge is that a position that can be one in which delivers a Labour government, and before a Labour government in 2020, a series of Labour victories, starting next year in Scotland, in our local elections, in the European referendum, and then in 2017 in my area, the Manchester mayor. And Wales, I beg your pardon, Wales, that's Wales next year as well.
London.
Now, I was coming to London is different. I was coming to London because I think there's a different thing going on there, which is about mobilising parts of our electorate that we've really not worked on before. So I think that's the question that people who are feeling uncertain are trying to reconcile. We've got somebody who's arrived with a very clear mandate and came in with a very clear position. You can't gainsay that or overlook it. What you have to ask is, working with the grain of that mandate, how do we ensure that it delivers electoral victory too? And that's really the question that I think this conference begins to open up.
Great, thanks. Tim, very briefly.
About 10 minutes ago, I urged you to stop talking about Tony Blair, and I counted 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 references to him. Quite a few of them from John, actually. So, confident that you're going to ignore my advice, I'm going to try and give you some good advice. And that's a couple of people, the lady here, and I think Ellen mentioned the SNP. I think that was a decisive factor in the election. To turn someone conservative, that's pretty significant, particularly married to you, with all your influence.
From a Lib Dem, yes.
The one thing I think this party should... Because you know what? The Tories, it worked once, they're going to use it again. That's going to be a big message at the next election. How are you going to protect yourself against that allegation next time? You need to embrace England more than the Conservatives. Mm. You need to be able to say to the electorate, if you vote Labour in England, you will get an English Labour government. And there's no way the SNP can impose anything on it. And yet England, compared to the word Blair, is not a word that is hardly being mentioned at all. England, embrace England. And you might find... And the patriotism...
What about Wales? Don't leave us out.
Well, Wales already has an assembly. England is the one part of the UK that has no serious devolution. Perhaps because it's part of a UK that doesn't normally vote Labour, and Labour didn't give it devolution for that reason. But embrace England, or you'll find the same thing that did for you at the last election will do for you again at the next one.
Thank you. Free advice from a Conservative. Fantastic. A very, very brief question. Very brief. And there's a woman right at the back in a red dress.
I'd just like to say there's something that's been forgotten here, is that after the defeat of Labour in the Scottish referendum, something very exciting is happening to our party, is that we are coming up, although we might not seem it, united. If we look at other parties across Europe, the Demos, Syriza, other left-wing parties, they're splitting. I think that that's really exciting, and we're actually the anomaly against the trend. And I think that we can be really proud of that, and it's something that we can take forward and see where we can go. One thing I've got different feelings about whatever's happening with Jeremy, but one thing I'm happy about is that he was very clear in his message for social Europe. And I'd like to hear the room's decision.
Yeah, we haven't talked about the Europe referendum yet. Okay, I'll go for Mandat. Thank you. Right.
Well, I think we've heard a very persuasive case about why democracy, for many of the panel members, is completely irrelevant. We might as well hand over power to a bunch of people and they could just decide what people deserve, because some people haven't paid attention to the enormous thing that happened in the summer. I can tell you from where I was, on the ground, we had people joining up to vote for Jeremy Corbyn, who are UKIP members, who are Greens, who are Lib Dems. I can't I've lost count of the amount of seminars I've been to in Labour Party conferences where people have worried and shook their heads about why young people are not engaging in politics, the demise of the big party. All of these things have been reversed. Now, if that has happened in the last few weeks, and we're still talking with, and applying the same lessons of 1997, surely it's not the electorate that needs to change, it's the people, the commentators who misread that. And the last point I want to make is, a lot of the panellists, as are they want to do in Labour Party conference, is speak about centre ground as if it was stuck. Our job is not to keep the centre ground that is a Tory centre ground. Our job is to change the centre ground and set the terms of debate. And that won't just happen from one speech or commentary on the commentary app. It will happen like it happened over the summer with mobilisation across this country.
Thank you. Very good contribution. Thank you. And any hands in the middle? No. So I'll go for the furthest back and see, which is a red leaflet being waved. And that's going to be it, I'm afraid.
Hi, I'm Nick from Battersea CLB. My question is to Ellie. Right at the start, you said that you thought about going and talking to Conservative voters in Thurrock or Nuneaton. My question is, what did they say to you? Because all the evidence of the Policy Institute did a study, Lord Ashcroft did a study, and John Cullis did a big study on why people didn't vote Labour. And the issues they raised were the economy, welfare, immigration. I didn't hear any of those things in Jeremy's speech today. You may think you can change the terms of debate, but if we're not even answering people's questions, then I don't see how we're going to even be able to do that.
Thank you very much. And Ellie's done that. I wonder if Jeremy's done that. We published something at the weekend about older voters, and we lost hundreds of thousands of older voters. I don't think this party's even yet to start thinking about how to win them back. Ellie, do you want to respond on all of those?
Unfortunately, the first question. Unfortunately, we haven't actually done the canvassing yet. I only said that we were going to. It's still in the offing, but then obviously it got swept up by a massive leadership election and put on the back burner. So I don't, and unfortunately I can't answer that question. But I did want to respond to the point about the centre ground, because I think that is a very good point. And I want to caution this by saying that at the start of this seminar, I urged curiosity from people who were unhappy about Corbyn's victory. But I would also urge Corbyn and his supporters to have the same curiosity about the Tory victory. One thing that I do notice is that there seems to be some kind of tendency on the left of not wanting to ask people questions about their beliefs because you're afraid of what they might say. But the fact is that they'll think it whether you ask them or not. So it's better to ask and to know what they think and why they think it, because then you have a chance of persuading them otherwise, which leads me neatly onto my point about the centre ground, which I'll be very quick to make, which is that you are totally right, that it's a completely shifting concept. And I want to make the point that, and I wonder whether Tim might disagree with me on this, that the Tories have never compromised. I don't feel that George Osborne and David Cameron have really compromised their economic principles. They've just managed to frame it in such a way that makes it appealing and palatable to the electorate, and have taken advantage of the political positions of the moment. Whereas I feel like on the left, there's a tendency to say, well, the electorate's over there and we're over here, so we must immediately change ourselves to be like the electorate. When actually, politics is about making a convincing argument. It's about persuading people to your point of view and to believe that they can be persuaded. So I think when we talk about public opinion, we talk about where people are, we must remember that that is a shifting thing, and not be afraid to ask difficult questions, but also not be afraid to try and change people's minds.
Thank you very much. Tim, there's a question there which, you know, takes us to how the Tories are responding. Are they grabbing a different sort of centre ground than they have in the past? And could I also ask you a question about Europe that was raised? What should the Labour Party be doing there?
There's lots in there. Can I just respond to the guy who raised the issue about all these new members that you have received? It reminds me of reports from the 1983 general election, when Michael Foot used to go to amazing rallies. Thousands of people used to turn up to hear him, and they did not understand why the opinion polls were saying something different. We've had in America recently a much bigger phenomenon than you've seen with Jeremy Corbyn, with the Tea Party movement. Huge crowds, huge influx of new members, but actually that enthusiasm put off most of America. And when it came to a general election, the Republicans were defeated. It doesn't matter that 0.27% of the British people voted for Jeremy Corbyn. What matters is that you can, that 11.3 million people voted Conservative at the last election. And the thing about non-voters is that they don't vote. The secret is in their title. Believing that you're going to convert them is a very dangerous bid. So I see your face is snarling, but I don't know why you think.
I mean,
that,
what's the point of having an election then?
Well, point
do you know how people think?
Well, the point
you should just
the point.
I haven't got a read across between that point.
Okay, let's hear the speaker. Thank you.
The point is that general elections are more important than leadership elections, and I think that's the point that you might be missing. The Tories in the centre ground that Ellie May has recognised. A lot of us are quite disappointed with George Osborne's deficit reduction strategy. You know, he was supposed to eliminate the deficit in one parliament. He's supposed to be the great anti-Keynesian. As far as I've seen, Britain is borrowing £100 billion every year still. Right. That's not Keynesian demand management. I don't know what is Keynesian demand management. He's much more pragmatic than perhaps some people in this room think.
He's Labour light.
The fact is, and I'm going to break my own rule now, Nick Clegg, George Osborne, Tony Blair, they could quite happily be in the same party together. So Labour-like, Tory-like, I don't know. That's a whole other debate. Europe, very briefly, because we're out of time, I would say it's part related to the England question as well. If you're always willing to give Europe, to stay in Europe, whatever comes out of the renegotiation, is that really putting Britain first? That's a Labour position that I don't think is particularly patriotic. And on the issue of persuasion, one of the things that worries me most about Jeremy Corbyn, if he's going to persuade anyone else to come towards him, he strikes me as someone who hasn't changed any substantial view since 1983, the early 1980s.
78.
I've changed lots of my views over the decades. Someone who is so unreflective, so fixed in his views, I actually find that quite frightening. And I think people will find that quite frightening.
Last couple of weeks
as well.
Thank you very much, Tim. John.
I think we've had right at the end here a kind of very eloquent and very clear exposition of the Corbynite approach to politics, which is one, deny there's a centre ground, two, then vaguely accept there might be a centre ground, three, then go and accept you might have to ask the voters who are there what they think. And four,
no, I opened by saying that I was going to canvass to ask Tory voters. There's been no shift in my approach.
I'll talk
of
you when you answer. But to
friends, kindness.
That's just not accurate.
Yeah.
It's not accurate.
No, and then the Corbynite. Okay, let me summarise much more clearly the Corbynite view of politics, which is.
And there you go with the contempt again as well. Sorry, carry on.
So, there's probably nothing more contemptuous than shouting across somebody else at a fringe meeting, but hey, you know, you're a Corbynist.
Kindness, come on.
I'm not.
You just happen to be in band, I know, carry on.
No, listen, mate. Listen, right. It's really, really, really fun for you guys who are enthusiastic. You're going to wreck one of the country's great political parties and therefore stop the disadvantaged in Britain getting the social housing they need, getting the tax credits restored. Enjoy it. The self-satisfaction, the smugness of the left is not just what they give to the public, which hate that, they give it to us too. Well, okay, fair enough. Now, the European Union. In the European Union, we have one chance, a chance that we've not had for a very long time, to win a national election. We've not done that, remember, since 2005. In 2016, 2017, whenever that referendum was held, we will be the only political party, national political party, out there campaigning for that victory. That is where the energy and the enthusiasm and the activity of all of the new Labour Party members and supporters has to go for the next period. There would be nothing more disastrous for our country than to leave Europe. There is nothing that is more unpatriotic than Tim Montgomery's position towards the European Union. I love Britain. There are no circumstances under which I think it would be good for us to leave the European Union.
And last word to Kate, try summing all that up.
Well, it's certainly the liveliest fringe meeting I've been at in a very long time, so you can't deny that where we are is provoking debate. Perhaps not very kindly debate. We may have something to learn about the kinder politics. But I think what's really interesting is that although we're hearing some really, really strong and actually very, very polarised views in this room, the general sense of this conference is as I think somebody said, that the party is broadly in this conference thinking of itself as unified. And what is really interesting is which of those two points of view is correct. A lot of people of different persuasions, different political views in this party, are trying to make the unified view a truth and a reality. That is certainly true of the people in the parliamentary party, most of whom, as you absolutely all know, did not support Jeremy for the leader. I didn't. I was an Yvette supporter. But most people, seeing where we are as a result of our own party's electoral processes, now believe that our obligation is to make everybody in our party work together to deliver a series of election victories. And I don't think open discussion prevents or gets in the way of that, but I do think that listening to and being with what is concerning and important to voters is what is most important in crafting your manifesto. And we are at a point where we've been through a summer that has been inward looking, inevitably. We need to get out of this conference and onto doorsteps and listen to what people are saying to us now. And from our principles and values, start crafting the policies that address what it is that they want to see a Labour Party bringing forward.
Thank you, Kate. Well, that brings us to a conclusion. This has been a quintessential Fabian debate. All perspectives on the left of politics represented, mostly in a kind and comradely manner, but with robust disagreement at times. If you're not a member of the Fabian Society and would like some more of this, please join us. There are forms on all the seats. We'd love to have more members just like the party. Will you join me in thanking our fantastic panel?
Yeah, we've got a quick bit about curiosity. I've got to do some.